Blog Talk. Hello and welcome to Awakenings. This is A Bit of Breathe by the Urban Myth Club. Just take a breath and welcome to the program. This is Michelle Mache, your host, and like I like to say, co-pilot. I do hope everyone is doing well. Welcome to all in the chat room that are coming in now, and all the listener callers that are coming on the lines as well, and welcome to all of you that are listening live also via CosmicDimensions.com. And of course, a warm welcome to those that are listening via the archives. I always like to say that because people always are emailing and saying that I can't always listen to you live, but we listen in the archives and we feel like we're right there with you listening as well and participating. And you are, right? Because all there is now. I'm Michelle Mache, and you are listening to Awakenings, those of you that are just coming in the chat room and on the lines. Awakenings is part of the converging flow. Here at Awakenings Radio, we focus on conscious living for conscious lives. We have host dialogues and interviews with spiritual teachers, healers, conscious experts, visionaries, awakened leaders, authors, conscious beings, and people of all walks of life that are focused on living consciously and taking this awareness into their everyday living. That's the key here. If you are in the chat as guests, welcome guests, and if you would like to interact in the chat room, which is wonderful to do because there's some amazing inside and information as well in the chat room. All you need to do is sign in through Blog Talk Radio, which is just your name and email, and then you can interact, or you're more than welcome to listen as a guest also. And if you'd like to listen by phone, the number is 347-539-5122. That's 347-539-5122. And if you have a question or a comment of feedback, just press 1 on the keypad and I will be alerted that you want to be heard. That's how we know it. So we're going to just dive right in today because there is so much going on, off energy, weird energy. Many of you maybe have been noticing in your own personal life or just looking around lately that not only have things sped up, not only have things changed, but there is some unexplained, should I say weirdness? Is that a technical term? We have with us someone that has a lot of insight into this. I'd like to call him part of the Awakenings family. We have with us Robert Wilkinson, who is the founder, writer, author also of the very well-respected blog site, Aquarius Papers. You can find info on him at aquariuspapers.com. And he is a astrologer, futurist, and metaphysician. And I really want to welcome back to the program Robert Wilkinson. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Michelle. Hi, everybody.
Yeah, so I am so glad. You know, every time you're on, it's always pivotal. There's always something going on that a lot of people have been questioning. 90% of the time I've been questioning too. This time when you're on, I'm really questioning. And, you know, we had a little dialogue before we went live, before we went on air, and you were explaining some stuff astrologically, which I definitely want, the grand irrationality with this Mars-Pluto aspect. So I'm so happy that you're here because you always are able to just map what's going on a living level as well as astrological, you know, able to connect the dots as to how these astrological configurations and aspects that we're going in, how these transits, how they're affecting people interpersonally, you know, individually and collectively, and it's just, I'm so appreciative. It's a wealth of information that is needed, especially now with what's going on. So there we have it. What is happening, Robert? What is going on right now?
Well, let me just bring everybody up to speed on the same page.
Okay.
As the longtime listeners of your show know from previous interviews, and anybody out there who's been reading my site for the last, 10 years or whatever, there is this phenomena going on called, that I've termed, the grand irrationality. And it's Neptune, Septile, Pluto. It is a non-rational, obsessive-compulsive, weird, crazy type of aspect that has put the entire human race at a fork in its road. Now, that would be one thing if it was just sort of generic and you know, very sort of abstract, but it's not, because seven times every month and at minimum 21 times every year, the Sun, Mercury, Venus, and Moon all move through the seven zones of this irrational, obsessive-compulsive, weird energy triggering it. And we are in the heart of one of the biggest zones being triggered right now with this Mars retrograde at 2 degrees of Leo. It's triceptile Pluto. It's triceptile Neptune. Mars in Leo is the nozzle. There are things erupting all over. People, I have 133 countries checking in at my website. I get like 11,000 people a week coming in from all over the world. And it is all over the map out there right now. People are losing it. Mm-hmm. Things are happening that make no sense. It's like visitations out of the blue. People just either going crazy or melting down or getting obsessive compulsive or something that makes no sense at all, happens for no reason at all. And as I always remind people on the site, if it seems weird and it doesn't make sense, it doesn't have to. Our job is to learn how to navigate the weirdness without losing our own equilibrium or making things worse.
Mm.
Okay?
Okay, the navigation.
In a nutshell.
Because there is that weirdness, and it's getting more and more off or off-centered. You're just seeing people do things that you're like, what? What is...
Why are people behaving so strangely?
Yeah.
And, I mean, people are taking weird chances out on the road. I'm seeing it every day. I was relating that to you before the show started. By the way, right now, the primary zones most affected are around 5 to 6 Capricorn, 27 to 28 Aquarius, 18 to 19 Aries, 9 to 10 Gemini, 1 to 3 of Leo, 23 to 24 of Virgo, and 14 to 15 degrees of Scorpio. And, of course, give a degree on either side of those spans. Any of us that have a natal or progressed planet in any of those zones are being particularly influenced in that way, in that life area, to make critical choices, critical realizations that will move our lives out of an old direction and into a new one.
Mm. I've definitely been feeling that, the new direction. And it's almost like it's definitely led by spirit. It's like this pull, you're being just pulled in another way, or just, nudge, but I'm finding I can just feel it in the core of my being. And a lot of people that I'm working with, Robert, are saying the same thing, that they're just can't, it's like,
I think it's
tangible. It's
the analogy
tangible.
Is like a spiritual pregnancy, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And we're kind of, the water's broken, and the baby is moving into the birth canal.
Yeah.
And it's getting very surreal.
Yeah.
Not just individually, but also, because if you look at what's going on a collective level, whether it's economic or governmental or social, there's some really strange energy out there. And it's unapologetic for its own sort of extremely bizarre nature. And the thing is a lot of my clients, as well as my friends and fans of the site, they check in, they all relate to me just how strange this time is, but they're also very happy that things are so clear what they can do and what they can't do, what they know they need to do, even if it means radical endings, radical deconstruction in their life. And of course, that's because we also have this thing called Saturn square Pluto that is occurring. Yeah, we entered into it in earnest last October, November. We've been in the heart of it since then. It's all part of those cardinal squares and crosses that have put humanity at its crossroads. There's a lot of really gear grinding, challenging, corrosive. It's almost like everything is completely bogged down and stuck in a really angry, negative frame, mm-hmm. which is why all of us who are truth-seeking souls really have to remember to maintain our equilibrium, our perspective, our sense of humor, honor our wisdom, honor our path to truth, and honor our spiritual community, because these are the three refuges where we can actually find a little sanity, where we know we can stay on track as eternal beings having a human experience. Yeah, okay, things are kind of strange out there, but that doesn't mean that we have to, shall we say, collapse into fear or uncertainty or join the craziness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sometimes, look, if we can't make it better, we at least don't have to make it worse.
Right, right.
And that takes presence of mind.
It does, it does. And I'm finding that, you know, a lot of, you know, myself included, but clients I'm working with, I'm like, take a beat, take a breath, meditate, do something else before, because what I'm finding, and Robert, I'd like to get your take on this, that this energy sometimes is causing an impulsiveness or compulsiveness. Right? Where people are just reacting.
Absolutely.
Right? Is that what? Okay.
I mean, definitely. Obsessive compulsive behavior is part of this irrationality. The thing is that, as I always remind people, I believe that there are harmless compulsions and then there are harmful compulsions.
Right.
You know, I mean, whether or not we, you know, brush our teeth one way or another is a harmless compulsion. Whether or not we feel like we have to do the dishes immediately after dinner as opposed to waiting a half an hour. Harmless compulsion. What's not so harmless is when somebody decides to take unreal chances that will potentially hurt other human beings, or where they're doing things that make absolutely no sense and it cannot lead to any productive outcome. That's where we have to really rely on our discrimination, you know, our divine discrimination, to know when we're in a situation that we probably shouldn't be in, or if we're in a situation with somebody that is just losing it, we have to know, shall we say, the limits of our own involvement in their crazy making.
Yeah, know your limitations. And is it also, Robert, in knowing your limitations, but knowing what you can do or cannot do?
Well, isn't that, part of the great prayer? I mean, you know, to have the strength to know what you can do and the strength to, you know, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Yeah.
Because, look, in the world, first of all, the world as we know it today in 2010 doesn't resemble anything most of us grew up with.
Right.
The norms are gone, the boundaries are gone, the usual frames of reference are no longer. And that's why it gives such a weird experience, because people aren't behaving very rationally. Situations are not being managed rationally. I mean, just think about the global economic mess. None of that was managed with a real sense of potential consequences and who's being affected and whether or not we're going from the real to the unreal as opposed to the unreal to the real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've actually gone from being sort of quasi-unreal to completely insanely unreal in terms of the global economics, in terms of the political systems, just even in terms of the way that we greet the problems in the world, even good people trying to do really good things. A lot of the old methods are obsolete. In other words, for example, it was very wonderful that everybody raised tens of millions for Haiti, but simply throwing tens of millions of dollars at Haiti is not going to fix it.
No.
You know, it's a quick fix, and I'm sure it relieves suffering on the short term, but then it's just crisis management. And the problem with crisis management is that it's a little bit like if the wall that's holding back the ocean starts springing too many leaks, you just don't have enough fingers to stop all of it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what's happening. So, I tell people, with the Saturn square Pluto going on right now, we really are having to be good pathfinders.
Mm.
That if we find ourselves disoriented or drifting or confronted with disputes that seem to just divert us from our best efforts or hassles or limitations or rules or strange stuff that's just making us feel like we're either spinning our wheels or we're trying to swim with a full suit of clothes, it's really important to go inward, to remember our spiritual practice, whatever it may be, whatever a person does to connect with the source of light and life, and to remember that they are eternals having a human experience, and to withdraw from all the craziness of the phenomenal stuff going on, and to get reoriented in one's truth of being, in one's path to a higher awareness, in concert with your loved ones, your spiritual brothers and sisters. And then we don't have to be tossed and turned within the craziness or the uncertainty. And I was just talking about this to somebody on my site the other day in the comment streams, that once we learn how to master the difficult aspects in our chart, you know, the difficult positions and so forth, then because we have learned how to respond productively or spiritually to those very difficult energies, or what the world might call dysfunctional energies that we turned into higher awareness and some skills, then we become part of the corrective force of nature herself. And we can walk through the world, we're in the world but not of it, but yet we find ourselves in situations where our skills, our insights, our awarenesses are perfect to resolve what needs resolving in that situation at that time.
And what do you think, but how do you align to that, Robert, to not get caught in the muck and the mire?
Well, it's the same tools we've always been told that are so-called spiritual things, you know, like meditation and practicing dispassion and detachment and the generation of goodwill and the ability to maintain positivity in the face of very discouraging energies, not as Pollyannas, but rather as people who are really secure in our spiritual awareness because we're doing a practice and we know that that practice is real and valuable, and it has given us the ability to reference the divine field. And that is the only true reality, not all of this impermanent stuff that just comes and goes and it doesn't seem to ever have any kind of stability or, you know, continuity. See, this is where, as we've talked about on previous shows, every century has a correlation with a certain planetary energy on a spiritual level. And the 21st century is truly the century of redemption as a result of the field of what I've called Divine Mother Energy growing stronger and stronger throughout this century. And all these things we call spiritual practices and tools are really just means to access that Divine Mother Energy field. And in that, we can find our sanctuary because we're not looking at what's transitory and what's crazy. We are in direct communion with what is eternal and redemptive and aware beyond the changes.
I like what you're saying, the spiritual practice about tapping into, you know, I call it I am, the God is energy. Because a lot of times I think people get hung up on the practice, but they don't realize why they're practicing. What is the practice?
Right.
What, where, you know, what's the...
Well, the practice should never lead us to an elitist separateness.
Mm-hmm.
Because we, in fact, are non-separate from all that is.
Okay.
We are unique awarenesses. There is no one else like you, Michelle. There is no one else like me. There's no one else who will ever have the same awarenesses that everybody listening, everybody in the chat room, everybody on earth has their own unique song to sing.
Yeah.
And that's what all those practices are about, is for us to get beyond the fear, get beyond the corrosive doubts, get beyond the identification with the separate self, and to really be able to view all that is through the eyes of spirit.
Mm.
And that's not a soft thing. It's not something where you're a doormat and you get kicked around. This is infinitely powerful energy that we get to live. If we find ourselves weak, or being apparently victimized or however by doing our practice, then our practice is off.
Mm-hmm.
Because ultimately, every great spiritual teacher, if you look at their lives, it doesn't matter whether they were Hindus or Buddhists or Christians or Jews or whatever. Every great spiritual teacher throughout history has had their struggles and their trials, but they weren't doormats. They were
That's pretty clear about
the true reality versus the false apparent problems. That's why we're here. That's why you're doing Blog Talk Radio. That's why I'm being interviewed by you, so that we can all commune.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can help you listeners remember that they are divine love, wisdom, intelligence incarnate, then they don't have to sweat the problems of the body, the problems of the feeling, the problems of the mind.
Well, that's, I think... to me, this age of light or information, the age of awareness that we are love, light, and wisdom, and this infinite intelligence, is remembering this and living from this place. You know, somehow that got hidden or shattered or skewed. But of course, in that, when you live this way, what it connects you to your true gifts, your true talents. Robert, one thing is, do you feel this grander rationality in a way, because there's a lot of shake-up with it? What is the purpose, I guess? Is there a purpose?
Well, it's just simply a phase of human evolution. And because it is anchored by Neptune, Septile, Pluto, the two outermost known spiritual planets, these deal like within like 500-year cycles. And within any given 500-year cycle, there's like 8 or 10 of these periods that can last anywhere from like about 7 years in the 30s to this one, which is going to last like 22 years or something. And we're at least past the halfway point. Really, the George Bush era was the heart of the craziest part of it. And now we're kind of on the back end of it, having to deal with, having lived with this sort of craziness for about 15 years, you know, about two-thirds of the way through. It is pretty wearying, I would think, to most people, just because we're living under this constant global shift.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that it makes no more sense to us than it did to the people in the 30s when they were living through all that weird stuff, you know, and the real edge of change and the real authoritarian assertions and ideas and just weird stuff going down. It was all coming down so fast, most people felt a sense of powerlessness. And there's really nothing to do but surf the wave, continuing our spiritual practice, being, you know, as open-minded, open-hearted as we can be, and still sort of meek as lambs and wise as serpents. Because when you're confronted with somebody who is completely crazy, you really shouldn't do damage to that which is precious.
Mm-hmm.
And this is forcing us all to understand, do not entrust crazy people with what you hold precious. And if a relationship has hit a logical fork in the road, that it looks like things are getting edgy, there's no point in trying to hold on to something that makes no sense, that's getting too edgy.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where the practice, for example, spiritual practice of surrender. You know, we think surrender is something weak, but it's not. Surrender is more like an acceptance of a higher truth of being. And sometimes it is time to say goodbye for a little while to whatever behavior or person or situation. And if, you know, like I've gotten a lot of comments on the site through people that are having a hard time in their work situation because people are melting down.
Yeah,
and all
that.
I can say is just, you know, be as much help as you can from the heart of compassion, but at the same time, don't unnecessarily expose yourself to a crazy person who could do real damage. You know, and I'm not saying be separate and paranoid and fearful. That's not.
But there is a lot of that. So how are you? You just surrender. You have to kind of move it on down the road, I guess.
That's right. That's right. You roll with the flow wherever it goes, even if it rolls out of here.
Right.
And you know.
That's a good one, Robert.
Well, thank you, Michael Nesmith, for that one.
Okay.
A truly great song he did years ago. See, that I believe that we humans love the known and the familiar.
Mm-hmm.
And we crave something being known and familiar and accessible and predictable. And yet, ultimately, from one angle of view, life is not that. We would like to think it is, but it's really not. I mean, we're sort of born in chaos. Nothing makes any sense from that point on. And then we live until we die, and most people go not knowing their essential nature, wondering why they were here, and if they did whatever it was that they came to do, usually with that sense that they didn't, because if they did, they would know it. And that's why I always try to remind people that life is in the making in the moment, and we don't have to justify anything to anyone except our own truth of being. And if we can really understand and be open to that inner voice, which we do contact in meditation, and sometimes other spiritual brothers and sisters are able to articulate that for us at a critical moment so that the light bulb goes on and we go, aha, that's true. That's really what I'm about, and that's what I know is true. Then we pursue that, if we're smart, we pursue that until we get the next signal, either confirming it or nudging us in a different direction or helping us come to a greater clarity around this miracle of this eternal consciousness that we always are, embodied in this weird four-dimensional reality. And ultimately, I don't think anybody's going anywhere very quickly. I think we're just constantly incarnating until we learn that the law of love demands our compassion, our strength, our kindness, our clarity around how to bring order out of chaos, how to balance the pairs of opposites in our life so that we can go into the dualisms of existence and not make a mess of it, you know, so that we can really be part of that corrective force of nature herself. And but to do it without thinking we're doing it, you know, just simply to live our truth in such a way that everything gets done without anything having been done. And that's part of that old, you can call it a Zen koan, you can call it a Vedantic point of view, you know, to be able to do so naturally that you are as though nature itself is just going, being what it is. And that you come and you go and you don't worry about the recognition or the gains or the losses. And you can just kind of be who you are in your highest wisdom self, moment to moment. And even if you're not that, it doesn't matter. The trick is not to get hung up in judging yourself for being bad because you, you know, fell out of meditation for 5 minutes or something because you got distracted by the mosquito. That, you know, I think we beat ourselves up too much as spiritual beings they're not being perfect according to some image of perfection.
Mm.
And Saturn square Pluto is exactly the point where a lot of things that just aren't working are going to go by the wayside.
And that's
there's
the Saturn square Pluto? Yeah, that is that aspect.
You know, and well, yeah, because Saturn is the duality of Saturn is dominion and slavery, and an affliction to Saturn, whether it's in the natal chart or transiting or whatever, shows our ability not to get trapped in mental slavery or emotional slavery or trapped in a pattern that mm-hmm. is corrosive or unproductive or you know, really works against our spiritual interests. And, I mean, to me, Pluto's being a spiritual planet can't really ever have a bad manifestation, though it can bring out the worst in people. That's still human behavior. That's not Pluto. That's people mm-hmm. being weird. And so really, it's always on us to take the high road to whatever degree we are able without giving ourselves a hard time for the ways we feel or think we've fallen short. The trick is to keep striving and striving and striving to come into spiritual awareness, to generate as much goodwill toward ourselves and our world as we are capable of, and no one's keeping score here.
Mm-hmm.
I think people get caught in blame and shame and doubt and fear and guilt, and none of those are helpful for being our spiritual self.
Mm. Is there a step...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, there seems to be, and maybe it's part of the Saturn square Pluto, that there's this separating out. I look at it as resonance. Things are no longer resonating any longer, or not enough of a resonance to hold something. But there does seem to be a separating out with people individually, but even collectively as certain groups, you know, finding
yeah.
more, right? Is that a function of this as well, or...
It's things like that, again, in astrology shows both specific timing and interrelated timing, if you will, the sort of the dance between the individual, their society, and cosmic evolution itself. And it's not, I mean, simply put, the grand irrationality just keeps the pressure on everybody to make constant choices and changes, being stuck in situations that make no sense, that force adaptability, that force sacrifices in one area so you can get focused in another area type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also coupled with these things called yods or fingers of God
mm-hmm.
that we were going through for the better part of about the last 2 weeks. Constant forced adjustments, constant sacrifices in certain ways, squeezing us into a narrow focus. And mostly the focus right now is in Pisces. And Pisces is the sign of endings.
Mm.
So we are seeing almost like we've all entered this weird dream state.
Yeah, I've been calling it is the surreal state. It is.
It is. It's the dream state where
yeah.
many things are ending. And I did an article on this a few days ago where I tried to offer that the thing about Pisces is it's where we can feel the vast connectedness with other humanity, you know, with all beings through all cultures and all times. This is where we really can contact our common humanity. And that's why Pisces is also the sign of forgiveness and compassion, because it's empathy. It's where we get to relate to others and feel what we're all going through together,
mm-hmm.
what all beings have gone through at one point or another in the last 3 million years of human evolution. Didn't matter what we were talking or thinking or feeling, how sophisticated or not, there's certain things that are basically common to all human beings. It's, you know, sort of that well that the I Ching talks about that's at the root of human experience. Everybody draws from the same well.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody feels those same feelings at one time or another. Good, bad, or indifferent. And the trick, of course, is to generate the good patterns while releasing the difficult patterns so that then we start generating a positive movement through all of these changes. And if we don't get spooked by the fact that sometimes things just have to end. And there's no justification. You don't have to feel good or bad. It's just some things just run their course. Mm-hmm. And that's when it almost doesn't matter how you do your closure ritual or what closure ritual you do, as long as you can just open to a greater compassion for yourself. Mm-hmm. You're moving on. They're moving on. It's moving on. It's no more. This is no more. That's no more. We don't have to find something wrong to say goodbye.
Yeah.
There may not be anything wrong. There may just be time that, okay, that chapter's over, you know, and it's time to move into something else. And the fact is, yes, there are difficult times going on, and sometimes it's very frustrating if you get fired from a job and you don't know why and take it very personally and you feel bad. It might not be your fault at all.
Mm-hmm.
Might be perfect to get you out of the abusive situation mm-hmm. so that you can use your imagination to find something better for the future.
Mm.
I mean, really, you know, this is about us being spiritually strong in terms of using our mind and being strong in our compassion for ourselves and for all that is, and really knowing that all forms pass away sooner or later, so you can't get too hung up on the happiness or the sadness, the comings or the goings. You can just take it all as part of the eternal life and regard a lot of the difficulties that's happening with relative dispassion, so that you don't get hung up on thinking that you are actually doing the suffering, because really it's only your mind and your feelings that are suffering.
Mm-hmm.
You can transcend it anytime you want. I mean, the Sufi martyrs proved that over centuries. You know, they can be hung upside down on a cross and be grinning because they're not feeling the physical pain. Mm-hmm. They're not feeling the pain of being persecuted unrighteously. You know, they're not feeling any kind of separateness. They're just at one with God or spirit or Divine Mother, whatever you want to call that energy.
Mm.
And we do have the power to transcend suffering.
Mm-hmm.
We really do. And let's face it, it's no big deal to do the right thing and feel good when everything's going great.
Yeah, exactly.
It's only when,
exactly.
It's only when you're slammed against the wall that then your spiritual practice has to be engaged. Because like right now, it's nobody's fault that at this particular time in history, there are massive gear-grinding, dysfunctional, lousy things happening. This is the inevitability of a dysfunctional system that's falling apart, you know, one part at a time. Mm-hmm. And we never believed in the interdependence of it, so we just felt like that piece after piece after piece could fail, and we could just toss it or ignore it, and that somehow the whole system was going to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not. The global system is coming apart at the seams in every way. And that should not be something that creates fear.
Mm-hmm.
That should be something that creates resolve, focus, intention, and strength to do what we have to do, to put ourselves into favorable position, to live our wisdom with our community, train ourselves to be of use in a world in transition. You know, a lot of the skills that people used to have are irrelevant now. They just, because we're accelerating out of the Pisces age and into the Aquarian age. We're not there yet, or else we wouldn't be all hung up on all these weird deceptions and, you know, believing in liars, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Believing in people that state falsehoods and untruths as though somehow, you know, because they seem to be the masters of industry, that somehow that makes them wise or smart or, you know, going to do the right thing. Obviously, the international bankers have almost destroyed the entire world economy, and they don't think that they did anything wrong.
No, that's the one thing. What's interesting is there seems with this grand irrationality that a lot of times people within certain systems are not seeing what they're doing. There's like a huge blind spot.
Well, that's pretty irrational.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you're doing something that you shouldn't be doing, that's pretty crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they came to believe that somehow that they could create $1,000 trillion of indebtedness. On a global economy, it's only like $50 trillion a year. I mean, this would take 20 years. What they created since the repeal of Steagall-Glass in 99, thank you, Phil Graham, who now works for a big-time European bank. He deregulated everything, and it turned, they could create these exotic instruments that nobody really understood, but that somehow magically generated hundreds of trillions of dollars in value that somebody was on the hook for, and it wasn't pegged to anything real. It wasn't pegged to a substance. It wasn't pegged to productivity. It wasn't pegged to anything except, you know, a bunch of air. And now the world is paying the price for believing in these fancy instruments that had no substantial reality, no value, no productivity.
Value.
That's pretty crazy, Michelle.
Yeah.
If you think about it, somebody sells you a piece of paper and says, hey, this is worth $1 trillion. And you look at it and you think, well, why is it worth $1 trillion? Well, it just is. I can't explain it to you.
That's right. But just believe. You know? Just believe.
Yeah. Well, and see, that's Pisces.
That's Pisces.
That's the age of Pisces. Believe in your leaders. Believe in people that supposedly know more than your heart and mind might know. You know, believe in people to have your best interest at heart when they don't have any idea what those best interests are.
Yeah.
And so, see, that's where, as we move out of the belief-doubt dichotomy of Pisces, we will increasingly move into the Aquarian ideal of pure knowledge.
Yeah. So knowing, moving into
once,
knowing.
Yeah, once you're living your spiritual truth, you don't believe in it.
No.
You don't doubt it. It's not about belief and doubt. It's even something like you don't have to believe, for example, in your skills as a pretty good talk show host because you have the direct knowledge through your experience of having done that. You know, I don't have to believe in astrology any more than doubt it. I just know it works.
Yeah.
And it's worked consistently for me for almost 40 years. And it works. My approach to it seems to work for tens of thousands of people all over the world every week, you know. So, I mean, this is where I think we really have to have faith that if we find the right practice that opens our heart knowing and trains our mind to be able to spot the sources of suffering and know how to antidote them, and where we can know the four primal emotions at work, if not in us, then in circumstances that we're with, and we know how to antidote fear, and we know how to antidote vanity, and we know how to antidote excessive desire, and we know how to antidote the craving for ever more intense feelings. And once we know we're in the presence of that, we don't have to wonder about anything. We can just simply know, for example, that if somebody's afraid, we just can't go there. We can't empathize with them. We can't sympathize with them because fear is a dangerous disease and a completely useless response. And if I could get anything across today, please, everyone listening to this, do not allow fear to have any power in any area of your life, physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, personally, interpersonally, or transpersonally. Fear is a useless response. And once we find that spiritual courage, then we enter into that heart of Leo, that strength of the heart power that can persist across lifetimes because we truly have brought the beast under the control of divine spirit, divine love, divine wisdom, divine intelligence. And that's the only real power.
Yes. Yeah, we got someone in the chat putting, Charisse, fear is debilitating. That's very true.
It is. It cripples our ability to see clearly. It fogs everything up. And really, there's no way to dance with it because it's a useless response. So, with the Saturn and Pluto, these symbolize the shadow planets, you know, the shadow material within us.
Yeah.
The fear of annihilation and the fear of enslavement.
Yeah. The shadow is majorly up.
Yeah, and see, but this is the time when if we're not indulging a shadow and we find that no matter what's coming up, our shadow is not coming out. That, it shouldn't necessarily be a source of pride, but it should be a source of knowledge
mm-hmm.
that where we're at in our spiritual quest.
Mm-hmm.
Because once we can't be influenced by fear or coercion, and once we no longer induce fear or coercion, then we've gone a long way to breaking free of the lower self.
Mm.
And really, that's what this, that's why we're in a body, you know, with feelings and a mind. We're here to get some, get a grip on this thing through sort of a gentle, compassionate, but strong self-control.
Yeah.
And integrate the personality so we can be our higher self.
Yeah, so we can be it and live it, express and experience it.
Yeah, be it.
So that the split. We've got a caller, caller number two. Hello, you're on Awakenings. Looks like a Skype call or private call.
Hello?
You're on the program. Okay, so, well, whoever is on a, either using a private number, anonymous number, or Skype, I've, I'm talking to you. Okay, well,
anyway.
I tried. There you go. So they've got the indication of that they had a question, but
That's okay. Maybe it'll come back.
Yeah. They're there, but the problem is with the unidentified number, or sometimes on Skype, if it's not a Skype number, it just, there's no way that I can delineate the number because it just shows 11111. So. And we've got a lot of 1111s, so I don't know which line it is anyway.
We're going into a fairly extended period, really from 2009 to about 2013, of some very hard angles between Saturn and Uranus and Pluto. And this is kind of like a clash of spiritual and worldly energies. And whether or not we have to be the constructive Saturn in the face of the negative Pluto, or whether we have to be the constructive Pluto in the face of the negative Saturn, doesn't really matter as long as we remember that every single challenging experience helps us take the high road, helps us practice, to demonstrate our spiritual practice. Because realizations alone are not enough. The world is constipated by realizations people aren't practicing. That this is really about us learning to translate our realizations into practical application to try to bring forth a more balanced or harmonious reality, whatever you want to call that. And then at some point, we will realize that all those things we've been practicing have made us masters in certain ways. And that's not so that we're important or big shots. That's just so we can enter into the underworld or enter into other people's pain and suffering to break the link between the two.
Now, is some of this having, what you're speaking of, the Uranus and Aquarius, or Uranus and Aries, Uranus and Aries aspect?
It's coming.
Yeah, that's
it's coming.
Interesting me. That is.
Things are going to start getting really amped up this summer. I mean, if you thought they're ramped up now, well, they are.
They are.
And at the same time, we talked about this on a previous discussion. Saturn was opposed to Uranus last August, September, October, even into November. And I likened that to a centrifuge, which was flinging all of us away from certain things and people and toward certain things and people.
Mm-hmm.
And as with any centrifuge, the denser material gets driven to the bottom of the vial, and the purified stuff's at the top. And then after the centrifuge is slowed down again, we take the vial out, we pour off the purified stuff, and we get rid of the sludge.
Yeah.
Well, we had one round of that August, September, October, November. We got another round of that coming in April and May and June. And then, and actually pretty much through about August, that's really it. So everyone should expect more polarization, more yes-no either or. And the trick there is not to try to hold on to whatever it is that's being separated out from the solution of your higher consciousness. There's just some dense material that's going to be flung out of beings. Mm-hmm. And by the same token, those who, you know, have sort of given themselves over to the dark side, no obvious names mentioned, we have a few in government, you know, look, water seeks its own level. You know, this mm-hmm. is the time when the good are finding the good mm-hmm. and the destructive are finding the destructive. The other thing, and this may or may not be the time to go into it, but Saturn has been conjuncting the Pluto of everybody on Earth since the summer of 2005. Mm. So we're in the heart of a 9-year span, 2005 to 2014, when Saturn was in Cancer and conjuncted the Pluto of everybody born in the teens and 20s and 30s. And then Saturn was in Leo for about 2.5 years, conjuncting the Pluto of everybody born in the 40s and most of the 50s. It's just now been in Virgo since the summer of 2007, thus impacting everybody born between about 1957 and 1970. Mm-hmm. And Saturn brings structure or a sense of confinement to whatever it touches. It brings also wisdom and maturity and authorship. And it's been touching the Pluto, the lord of the underworld all of us. Yeah, and see, everybody born in the 70s, who has Saturn in Libra, or Pluto in Libra, Saturn's begun to touch the Plutos of those born in 70, 71, 72. And by August, then everybody born in the 70s will be going through about a 2-year period of having their deepest fears made real or their deepest fears expunged for all time.
Mm.
So, you know, we really are still, and of course then the people born in the 80s up to the mid-90s, they're going to be going through their trials right around like 2012, 2013, 2014. So this is like a rolling energy forcing the restructuring of the deepest divine power, Pluto, in every generation on Earth. So not only are we dealing with this transit-to-transit gear grind showing the ongoing events, but this rolling wave of restructuring of divine energy all the way down to corrosive fear has been taking place for all of the older generations, and now it's increasingly catching up to the younger generations, and we're in the heart of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we have this ongoing Saturn helping us claim the power of our deepest Plutonian Shiva Parvati type of energy. And that's going on at the same time that the ongoing gear grind is occurring and the grand irrationality is getting triggered on an almost constant basis. Mm-hmm. So you know, this is a very dynamic time for people because it seems like every time they get one thing taken care of, there's 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 more things popping up.
That's right.
Some of which don't make any sense.
Yeah.
And so I have great compassion for what we're all going through right now.
I do too. And I think the more people can know what's actually going on, that is absolutely a form of empowerment. We have another caller. Let's see. Hello, 206-313, you're on the program.
Hi, Michelle, it's Teresa.
Hey, Teresa, welcome to
the
program.
Hi, Robert. I'm fascinated.
Hi.
I could sit here and listen to you talk forever. And usually with astrology, it gets so complicated and convoluted for people who don't study it, and you explain it so well that it puts all the puzzle pieces and perfect places to make sense.
Mm.
Well, I'm glad that it's clear.
Are you?
Go ahead. No, I'm waiting.
Yeah. Go ahead, Teresa.
We're all waiting. That's the thing. We're all waiting.
Here's something. You know, here's something funny is, Harry, you were saying that the good is finding the good and the bad is finding the bad. If you want to put a label on it, is
Duality on it.
Yeah. I was in at work the other day and I encounter a lot people, rude people. Obviously, I live in the city, but a lot of people don't hold doors and they don't wait, you know, hold the elevator for you. And the other day I was standing at the elevator and there were three or four of us at the door. We all missed it. We missed the elevator because we all were waiting for the other people to go in. And we just stood there and laughed. And I thought, we're all too nice. And we all missed the elevator. But I thought I got a kick out of it because I thought, you know, that's a first. You know, you'll find one or two people that will do that. But for the most part, the majority are in a rush and not either not paying. It's not that anybody's doing anything intentional. I think everybody's just in their own zone. And so they're not in that polite mode of what I call service. But anyway, you triggered that thought. I wanted to see if I gave you some generic my specs. I know you can't give me a full thing, but if you can give me an idea of, you've given me some tips on what's going on just in what you've said, but I was born in 1969, so that explains that I'm in the thick of this tornado, and it's seriously crazy how everything is completely coming apart at the seams, and I feel at times like I'm losing my mind. Like I'm one of those people that you said is having a meltdown. I feel like I'm at that meltdown stage.
Well, as long as you're
losing
your heart.
I'm trying to hold the world up.
Yeah, that's important. But you just said something too. You're trying to hold the world up.
Well, I've done that for so long, and I thought I let it go, and I'm being shown now that I haven't, because it's getting to the point where I'm being forced to let go and let go of things that I thought that I needed. I guess I thought that I needed. But it's funny how you think that you've worked through something. And not only in the past, it was like, okay, here's one lesson. Okay, good. And here's another lesson. Okay, good. But this is like, here's it all. Deal with it. Let's see how you do. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, I don't know. I could do this.
This is a time of natural endings because of
right.
the Jupiter and Pisces. As a prelude to the new openings that are coming this summer when Jupiter conjuncts Uranus in Aries. And the thing about life on this earth is that you gotta practice emptiness before it can be filled.
Absolutely.
If you're filled, there's nowhere for new contents to come. And so this is really the time not to hold on or get frustrated or get ambivalent about things, but instead to see how to do a closure ritual so you can take back your power from whatever it was you projected that power onto.
Right.
Because sometimes things are just over, you know, and at that point, you don't want to run away. You don't want to slink away. You don't want to hide. You want in your spiritual strength to say, okay, well, this is done, and I'm going to do this closure ritual, and I'm going to honor what brought me to the dance, and then I'm going to hold the emptiness and insist that whatever spirit sends me, or wherever spirit sends me, whatever spirit sends me, however you want to frame it, that it's going to be perfect for me at this point in time in my evolution, so I can practice my skills, so I can be with my spiritual brothers and sisters, so I'm not so frustrated by everything that has held me back that I wish it happened and didn't happen, or I struggled with and I kind of made some of it happen, but I felt unfulfilled about this other stuff. And sometimes it's just time to say goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And you can take back the power. That's the trick, okay, is that I think that sometimes we just kind of crash from circumstance to circumstance, relationship to relationship, job to job, without ever really getting the closure we need so that we can reclaim our power.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we reclaim our power, then we can turn from that place of centeredness. and naturally move toward what we know would be more fulfilling in now, rather than struggling with something we started a long time ago, that chapter's over. And there's no point in struggling with something that's already done. It's better just to sort of take the tally, figure out what you learned, find your strength, and move forward from there. See, I think a lot of people forget that, and they sort of suffer the blows of life without ever remembering that you are divine, you are eternal, you are loving, wise, and intelligent, and if you can just be that, then you don't have to worry about a lot of the other stuff.
I think with myself personally is trying to, I have in the past and I'm working through now, not staying stuck in the scenario, experience, people. It literally touches all gamuts from my personal life to my job to everything. And not, I've had this sense of I need to make sure everything is taken care of, all the I's are dotted and T's are crossed before I say goodbye. And I'm really, really being pushed that that does not need to happen. It's beyond overdue and you
right.
need to move on. And yet you still have
right.
that internal struggle of thinking, but wait, I can't just leave because I have to do this, I have to do that, and plan, and yada, yada, yada,
sometimes
you know, the things that your mind comes
delayed,
up with.
That, right? Robert, sometimes this, I think that's a delaying, isn't it? Because it's the ego personality. It's the little self that likes
trying to control,
yeah.
trying to make it nice, trying to make it right, trying to make it all fit into a nice, neat package.
Right.
And some things just aren't that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes it's not worth one more moment
right.
to dance and struggle with something that it's not you anymore.
Right.
What's
and that's
the point? It's like trying to speak Chinese when you're in Greece or something.
That's exactly
right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Enough. 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 When is enough? Enough.
But see, that's a very good point. What you said, Robert. It does remind me. It's like somebody planning, like you said, planning on studying Chinese, and now they find out that they're being transferred to Greece.
Yeah.
But they're still stuck on, I decided I'm going to study Chinese. I'm going to stay, you know, I'm not saying you're doing this, Teresa, but I am seeing that kind of irrational behavior
mm-hmm.
right now. It's like,
yeah.
It's like, no, you're getting transferred to Greece. You don't need to study Chinese. But I told myself I was going to study Chinese. It's like,
you know, it's
okay.
funny. It's because
well,
it's not like it's not like it's a bad thing because the intention is good. That's the kind of person that I am. Not a controlling person in that I want to control everything, but more so that I think I'm helping myself by planning accordingly, by, you know, setting, not just setting goals, but, okay, here's the instance. I'm going to put myself out there. Everybody, you ready? my relationship with my husband is beyond overdue. I've tried to hope that things are going to get better. I've tried to rectify things on my end. I've tried to do everything that I thought I could to, you know, mend this relationship, and it's not happening. It's actually getting worse. So, and with that, it's like, okay, so now I've come to the realization that it's going to end. But before it ends, there's things that we need to do, split off financially, get bank accounts, this and that, and bills and financial stuff, you know, and it's like my brain's going, okay, but I need to do this. And my heart is saying, it's
but
fine.
But I think, and Robert,
it's
I
fine.
Think, could speak to this. There's a balance of that, though, isn't there, Robert? I mean, sometimes it seems like it's the little self getting in the way for control. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, the thing about relationships are that the big lesson I've had to learn this lifetime is it actually takes two to make a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And once one or both are not really on the same page, then it's one of those things that you obviously want to try to maintain your friendships and your loving relationships and so forth, but it does take two, and there's plenty of people out there who you could love and who could love you as long as you don't put too much baggage on it.
Right.
And sometimes the closure ritual can be fast, like, hey, I just can't do this anymore. other times it's, okay, we got to figure out the assets and split them up. And then the point is not to go where you don't need to go. Because, again, at the end of things, as I said earlier, it's very human to try to make something wrong. This must be ending because something's wrong. And in fact, it might just have run its natural course.
You know, I haven't done that, but my husband has. It's like he's looking for an excuse for it to be over. And I've said, there doesn't have to be.
Right.
There doesn't to be. It's, and ironically enough, this relationship has been the way it's been all along in reality. My sense of my warped sense of myself and the situation at hand, I lived with it. I tolerated it. I put myself aside and lived, you know, without my own identity. And as I've become to come forward in my own, I've realized that this has never really been any different. It's me. It's now realizing that this has never been me, and whether it had been 20 years ago or now, it's now time for me to step out and do what I want to do. And it's not wrong, right, or otherwise. It's just what it is. And that blame game.
But there sounds like there's a preponderance of this on right now, Robert.
It's interesting. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, truly, one of my favorite poets, Lucille Clifton, died recently, and I posted one of my favorite poems of hers on my site, AquariusPapers.com, and she, it seemed to encapsulate the time. And the poem was called The Light That Came to Lucille Clifton. And let me just give you this, because I think a lot of people can identify with this.
Okay.
The light that came to Lucille Clifton came in a shift of knowing, when even her fondest sureties faded away. It was the summer she understood that she had not understood and was not mistress even of her own off eye. Then the man escaped, throwing away his tie, and the children grew legs and started walking, and she could see the peril of an unexamined life. She closed her eyes, afraid to look for her authenticity, but the light insists on itself in the world. A voice from the non-dead past started talking. She closed her ears, and it spelled out in her hand, "You might as well answer the door, my child. The truth is furiously knocking."
Wow.
I have
answer the door, everyone. Wow.
I have
the truth is furiously knocking.
Yeah, answer the door. A lot of the door is shaking. They're going to the knob, people. You know.
Yeah, anytime we are afraid to look for our authenticity, the light insists on itself in the world.
Yeah.
And we are that light. Mm. We cannot hide from it. We can't feel ashamed of it. It's the only thing we are. It's probably the only thing that's really, really real. And, you know, this place is about joy and love and sorrow and compassion and strength, of bringing order out of chaos, of finding divine knowledge, divine devotion, divine appreciation, so that we really can sing that unique song of our heart in a way that is perfect for our world, and be completely unabashed and unashamed of being our light in this world.
Beautiful. Thank you, Teresa, for calling in.
Thank
for
you.
Inspiring
this is powerful. I'm going to go pull that. I'm going to go pull that up.
Yeah,
thank
it's on his.
So
yeah,
it's on
the article. R.I.P. Lucille Clifton.
Yeah, either
it's
there, but you
website.
Also posted AquariusPapers.com.
AquariusPapers.com.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
AquariusPapers.com.
Thank you so much. Everything you speak of is just more validation that it's time. So
yeah.
I hope myself being vulnerable, I've helped other people in realizing that it's time.
And a chart is always a good way to look at that, too. I love getting my chart done, mapping out what's going on and why, because somehow it objectifies it. Because very often, you know, we go through these changes I don't care if they're individual or collective changes, and thinking, you know, why me, or something's wrong with me, or why is this disruption happening, or I didn't do it right. And then you just look in the chart, it's like, hey, time to go, time to do something else. You know, time to focus on the horizon of the chart, the top of the chart. You know, you've been, you know, so it just really helps to objectify what's going on. That's good for the little ego mind, because the ego mind, you know, gets stuck in the mire of subjectivity instead of just going, wow, this is a new transition. This is the next level. This is where I'm to be going, you know. So anyway, thanks for calling in, Teresa. It's always great to hear from you.
Yes.
Okay, great.
There's some pretty heavy stuff coming down for everybody, and it's very natural to wonder if we're the ones losing it, or if it's in the situation, if it's us, if it's someone else. And that's where, you know, it's so important to get personality integration anyway, and in a variety of ways. This is where I think some people underestimate the power of psychology and certain types of therapy to really help us come to grips with elements that we learned when we were younger, and just how to reintegrate our shadow material in a way that they become strengths where we can confront it. Because again, we're always going to find ourselves in situations that are pretty weird, chaotic, hectic, difficult, whatever you want to call it. If not in our own life, then in our friends. Or, you know, maybe we just run into somebody and they start talking to us about something. And that's when it's important that we don't fear those feelings. We don't hide from those feelings. We don't even reject those feelings. Mm. But we can allow those feelings without giving them any power on the disruptive or unfortunate side. You know, where we can literally walk into the hell of the occasional problems here, and we don't lose our equilibrium. We don't lose our cheerfulness. I mean, we may not be all that happy, but we don't have to go into sorrow, gloom. Yeah, and that sorrow is different. You know, the type of sorrow I'm talking about here is different than the legitimate need to grieve what we've loved and is no more. I mean, that's honoring the bond of love between our heart and the heart of whatever it was that we're grieving.
Mm.
But there's just times that I think we get hung up on feeling bad about feeling bad.
Yeah.
It's what Buddhism calls the mind suffering over its own suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And the only antidote for that is the generation of goodwill, the generation of bodhicitta, the ability to be able to almost like just laugh at the cosmic lila, the play here, and realize that what suffers is the separate self, the fear-based self, the thing that knows all things pass away, even the good stuff, the thing that dreads the bad stuff, the thing that identifies with the suffering rather than being able to just look at the being that is suffering and feel infinite compassion, but not necessarily get trapped in that suffering. And of course, it's always helpful to have the discrimination to know how the suffering arose and if there's anything we can do about it, or if there's not anything we can do about it, and how to transmute, keep that lower self, keep integrating it and integrating it and integrating it so that it becomes a good vehicle for the higher self and occasionally the soul.
Well, that's one of the things I've seen, not enough people doing the inner work, the therapy, the integration, the shadow, taking the time, the spiritual work, the meditation. I mean, it's like, you know, you have to work out, at least walk, you have to do, you know, things for the body, you have to eat certain foods. That mental, emotional, spiritual aspect, and those are the people that I'm finding are perhaps having the most challenge at this time, that don't have some tools to fall back on. And like you said earlier, Robert, community, real community that is not going to BS you, you know, people that
yeah,
will hold you accountable.
Right. No, exactly, because
right?
your true spiritual friends are there to
yeah.
help you in your weakness, not
yeah.
to just simply be your cheerleaders.
Yeah. So, you know, I had something the other week, and I was picking up on something, and then someone close to me had mentioned something, and I said, oh, good, I'm glad, because this is confirming something. And then another person that this person had talked to said, well, I saw this too, and I didn't want to say anything. And I got on the phone, and I said, that's not the kind of people I need around. I said, you need to say something when you see something or you feel something or think something. Just say it, because that's – at some point I'm going to be evaluating, and I'll remember those people that said, honestly, you know, this was my perception or what I saw. And I said, I don't need people around that are just going to say – watch something and not say anything, or, you know, say what you think they think you want to hear. You know, that does no good. That's no good at all.
You know, I really think that because the Saturn square Pluto is such a hard aspect, and the grand irrationality is focusing through Mars and Leo, which is like really, really very strong, very powerful, all these cardinal squares and oppositions that are coming up, as well as the mutable opposition, very hard. And I think it's revealing where we are blocked or dammed up.
Mm-hmm.
And I truly would offer that perhaps because everything is so hard and rigid right now, this is the perfect time for practicing gentleness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially gentleness in breaking up the blockages or dissolving the blockages, because this is really about how to get over divisive egoism. You know, even the divided ego self, you know, where one part of us is divided against another part of us. I'm not talking about necessarily other people.
No.
Just, you know, oh, do I do this? Don't I do this? Do I
yeah.
stay here? Do I do something different? That this is, and this is where I know we have to get to the spiritual
yeah.
in order to find that right view of our unity, our spiritual nature, of being able from a place of timelessness and compassion to dissolve blockages mm-hmm. and get free of that self-cherishing, self-grasping part of our mind. You know, and to be able to step back from the manipulations or the ulterior considerations and mm-hmm. just be that equilibrium, that steadfastness, while we are dissolving that divisive egoism.
Mm.
That truly, that when hardness and selfishness divide people and rigidity leads to separations and greed and fear isolate people, that's the exact time to go to spirit and remember your common relationship, you know, and to be able to dissolve all of that separateness through whatever rituals, you know, we can. And again, and just like there's seven ray energies, there are seven great schools of thought. There's seven great types of rituals that we can do. We can do an art ritual, we do a science ritual, we do a devotional ritual, we do an order ritual. You know, there's a lot of different ways of dissolving things and overcoming egoism and finding our common humanity. And part of this really, I think, involves setting aside our ego stuff and seeing that it's not about us alone. That this is about us in relationship to our brothers and sisters, to the planet, to our angel or deva helpers. This is really about sort of having to remember our unity with all that is as an antidote to all of this terrible selfishness. And in fact, look, this is really the time to either avoid a danger before it comes, keep an existing danger at a distance, or find a way out of the danger that we're already in. And the danger here is really the separateness, the separate self that yields to control and fear and struggle and sometimes craziness and irrationality and feels like, you know, we have to everything is a win or lose type of situation, when in fact there's another whole way to view the comings and goings. And truly, in this time of Jupiter and Pisces, flow. Flow. Don't shrink from anything. You know, don't fear anything. Never lose your integrity. Never lose your essential nature. And just kind of walk on and keep learning and keep sharing and keep flowing. And make that consistency, that spiritual consistency in the ever-present now, the mantra, the drumbeat, the surfing, if you will.
Something I think that you said was really important was that the having that the compassion can also be strong, but also you can be firm but gentle. You can still have that gentleness. I think a lot of times people think that if accepting something always has to be kind of soft or weak, or if I don't like something that I have to be hard on it, you know, or, you know, I think that disparity, there seems to be a combination of the two, which is definitely connecting more into that expanded self or higher self to be able to attain that gentleness.
See, I kind of look at it almost like jade. It's one of the hardest substances on earth, but it's very soft in its luster. It's soft to the touch. It's very smooth. It's very soft. And yet it's very hard. Okay. And to me, that's like one of those things that it's not a, I don't think, look, first of all, nobody ever became a spiritual master by being rigid or by losing their cool in the face of a circumstance or another human being. Above all, we should be willing to honor the spiritual practice that we are as we walk through life. And in living that spiritual practice, first of all, we're not generating unfortunate patterns. Second of all, we are antidoting unfortunate patterns and in ourselves, in our own life. And then again, we become sort of the antidote to the suffering that's going on in the world, and we can enter into it without fear, without apprehension, without rigidity, without being bossy or know-it-all or all this other stuff that's ego. We can just be there and express powerful words and deeds of compassion. I mean, I think of the Dalai Lama here. I mean, yeah, this is a guy who's one of the softest, kindest, most playful, funny guys on earth, and yet think of the strength he had to have.
That's right.
In holding his people together in the face of the Chinese takeover of his land, the destruction of the temples, and the Tibetan culture. Very powerful man, and yet very soft, very compassionate. And yet, I've taken instruction with him enough to know that he's real clear.
Yeah.
And I guess I could just share one thing that I got from him the last time I got to sit, you know, when he was in Long Beach, was he said, look, you know, if you can, observe the five precepts. If you can't, then observe four of them. If you can't observe four, then observe three. The best you're able, observe three. If you can't even observe three or even two, then observe one. And if you can't do one perfectly, then do one part of the time. And to me, that was so generous, such a generous spirit, because it's not about when we fall short of our ideal that matters. It's that we're willing to persevere in doing the best we're able in our humanness, despite outer conditions, despite inner conditions, that we just persist in doing our practice the best we can, and taking the opportunity not to hide from articulating to our brothers and sisters, but instead be willing to share our hearts and share our minds with our brothers and sisters, not to be right or wrong, but rather to be with others in the one heart, the one life, the one truth, the one God that we all are together.
And it goes back to that truth that you're talking about, speaking your truth in that moment, whatever it is, and living that. I think this rumbling is about that, the shake-up, the shaking out what is blocking the truth, what's blocking the light, what's blocking us from answering that door, you know, what's getting in the way of it.
Yeah, and there's no point in fighting the system because that just feeds it power. It's more important for us to raise ourselves to the purest mind and the purest heart and the best skills. If we don't know something, then we need to learn. If something's done, then bless the passage and open to something better, more perfect, more appropriate to who we are right here, right now. And to remember that if a relationship, a friendship, or a marriage, or whatever ends, it's okay. We're still infinitely lovable beings. There are many more people who could love us and who we could love. And that's why we go and cultivate our friendships.
That's right.
Because our friends are forever, our true friends. And I have found through many, many decades of you know, both counseling spiritual beings and helping, you know, groups of spiritual beings, truly any true group is a group of friends. And it doesn't mean you're always praying together or eating together, but it means you really are friends. And that those are the ones that you can trust, because your friends are never going to make you feel slimy. Your friends are never going to be humiliators or try to beat you over the head with either what they've done right or what they think you've done wrong or you think you've done wrong. Your friends will love you in your strength. Your friends will love you in your weakness. Your friends will offer what they can and also at the same time stand aside while you go through what you have to go through, but they will be there for you. They're not going to necessarily try to do it for you, because nobody, look, it's one, we all have a ticket to ride and we all have one ride to take. And you know, and I can't walk your walk. You can't walk mine. But if in your uncertainty or your weakness or your doubt or whatever, you turn to me, then I should be the best friend I can be to you, offering what I can and still knowing that whether you know, win, lose, do well or don't do well, I love you, you love me, however that can be articulated, and that we know that we are, shall we say, individualized sparks of eternal consciousness within the body of all that is.
Yeah. Well put. Going to leave it there, Robert. It's been a wonderful, hey, that's a great place to leave it, I think. I think that is it. Whew. As always, great to connect with you. Wonderful sharing today and amazing, relevant and helpful insight and understanding that you've given us all today. So I really appreciate you sharing on Awakenings.
Glad to be here.
Yeah.
We're all in this together, my dear.
Oh, yeah, we are. Yeah. It's a big boat. It's a big boat. We're all in this.
Well, it's just a lovely life.
Yeah.
All things considered.
It
this
is.
World is a fantastic place to learn about love.
Magical place. Magical place. For those that are listening now and later in the archives, if you'd like more information on Robert or even to do some interpersonal work with him, you can reach him at AquariusPapers.com. That's AquariusPapers.com. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And new listeners, guests, great to see you. And as always, continue to share your insight, shine your light, and keep awake. And Awakenings airs every Wednesday and Friday, 12 p.m. Pacific time. For more information, you can email awakenings@selfinlight.com or connect with us on Facebook at Awakenings Radio. Our guest today has been Robert Wilkinson of AquariusPapers.com.